And welcome again to Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman, a co-host, and with me today will be David Holly. In this episode, we will be previewing the upcoming match for Fulham against Blackburn on Sunday. We'll also have another edition of Cottage Talk Controversy Roundtable, which makes its return. We have much to get through, but before we get going, I have to welcome back my Cottage Talk co-host to the show. David, how you doing and how you feeling?
Hi, Russ. Still recuperating. Hopefully I'm getting better. I'm going to try and make it to Fulham on Sunday if I don't feel too bad. Seems ages since we did this together, though, doesn't it?
It's been a long time. That's why I'm glad that we could do this. I do enjoy sometimes when it's just me and you. You know, I do like multiple co-hosts, but it's always fun doing it with you, David. So this should be a fun hour.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah, it's good to... We have our own kind of private humour sometimes. I think you and I, we've got used to it by now. I'm not sure everyone else quite... I think they're getting there, but maybe they're
right.
Not quite fully in tune with us yet.
Right. And let me just stress, I enjoyed doing the show with all my co-hosts. In fact, I enjoyed very much doing the show last time out with Mike Gregg, just me and Mike Gregg. I like sometimes doing it with Amelia. But I also like doing it sometimes just me and you. You know, again, sometimes our schedules just work out that way, or we have multiple co-hosts. That's what's great about doing the show is we can always mix it up and keep it fresh. But it's always good to do it with you. But before we really get into talking about Fulham, I want to talk about something. You know, I was in Maine over the weekend. You know, again, a mini holiday for me and my family. And, I'm driving around Sunday morning, and who do I hear on the radio? I'm just driving around. I'm listening to TalkSport, and I hear David Holly. David, you're on TalkSport. Talk about your appearance.
Well, I obviously, you knew about it because you helped. You put me up for it, I guess. So they were looking for tales from fans who maybe, you know, go over and above the kind of normal what's expected to be a fan. And just in my case, I guess it's because I live 100 miles from London. I have a 200-mile round trip for every home game. And until the Brighton game this season, I hadn't missed a home match for 5 years. But unfortunately, I missed that one with my ill health. But they wanted to hear from me about, you know, my loyalty and commitment to Fulham, I think, but also they were quite interested a little bit with Cottage Talk, and we got a bit of a good plug for the show on it, didn't we?
We did. It was nice to hear them plug the show, but again, great job by you, great discussion. You know, again, it went to a weird place, you know what I'm talking about, but beyond that, it was fun to hear you on TalkSport, Dave.
Yeah, well, I thank you for obviously in two ways, because obviously you put me forward because I guess you weren't available anyway, but also because of what I do in following Fulham. But also, I guess the confidence I've gained in doing this kind of thing, I feel quite confident speaking on national radio because I'm used to doing it with you guys. I remember the very first Cottage Talk I did, which was nearly 2 years ago now. I think it was just me and you as well that day. And I thought,
yep.
I think it was probably a two-hour show or one-and-a-half-hour show. I thought, how on earth am I going to get through this? You know, I was scared stiff. But, you know, we got through it, and, you haven't been able to get rid of me since, really. I must have been, even with my illness and absences, I must have been one of the most regular co-hosts on Cottage Talk since that day. So it gave me confidence to come on and talk. And when I've had the opportunity to go on TalkSport a few times now, actually, it's... I haven't been fazed by it, and I'm quite happy to talk all day long about the football team I love, obviously.
Right, and honestly, it's great that you're on there. It's great whenever one of us are on there. Chris Simpson's been on there a bunch of times. I've been on there. And it's great just to hear talk about Fulham on TalkSport. And, whenever we get the opportunity, you know, we all should take it. And I'm glad that they contacted me, and I could then tell them about you, and then they contacted you. So it worked out great, and you did an excellent job, David. And, and it was nice that they gave us that plug for the show. And who knows, maybe we got some new listeners from that, which is always great. All right, David, enough talking about us, you know, you, me, you know, our experiences with TalkSport. Let's now talk about Fulham. And I brought back the Cottage Talk Controversy Roundtable. It's been a while. So let's go through it. I have a couple topics. I put it on the Cottage Talk Facebook page, so the fans actually have some really interesting views on this. But let's start here, and I want to get your thoughts first. Do Fulham need to add a striker during the emergency loan window? Now, Fulham were trying very hard. Again, there's been so much speculation about them trying to bring in Gary Hooper. It didn't come off, but I'm asking you, do they need to bring in a striker, David?
You know, I'm in really in two minds. I'm not sure if we do. Obviously, we've suffered injuries in key places, and if you suffer an injury, the whole perception will change. But at this stage, we've kind of got into a little bit of a settled run with McCormack and Dembele starting, Corley coming off the bench as super sub, and as it stands at this minute, we don't actually need another striker there. I guess the question would be if there was someone who would bring something completely different to the table than what we already have. Obviously, we have Matt Smith not too far away from coming back, and he does bring something different to the table.
That's right.
And I'm not sure whether bringing someone in on a short-term loan would be productive or disruptive, to be honest with you, because, you know, we need to try and get into a playing style and a set of personnel. We're used to playing with each other. You know, Kit has now built the squad that he wanted, I think, and we need to use that squad. I'm not sure if people coming in and out is going to be helpful. I know, obviously, in key positions we've had to because of injuries, but I don't know if it would upset the status quo more than it would help us.
You know, it's an interesting topic. I was speaking to Mike about this on the last show, and obviously Mike is very vocal about the youngsters, you know, Colley Woodrow and Moussa Dembele. He wants to see them get some time going into Christmas, you know, a good run of matches. And I'm kind of there with him. You know, I'm more on the side that maybe we don't right now. Maybe we should play it by ear, see how things go, David. But I got a funny feeling that they're still looking for a striker. But I'm okay with the situation as it is right now.
Yeah, no, me too. It's, as long as we don't suffer an injury, obviously.
Right.
Or a complete loss of form. But, you know, Corley's knocking on the door. I know he's had his critics, but he's come off the bench twice and hit the back of the net. And, you know, he's pressing his claim to play. Moussa's looked quite dangerous in spells. And I think with Moussa, if he starts finding the back of the net, I think the floodgates could open. I think it'll just be a confidence thing for him, you know. He'll suddenly realize.
And that's kind of where
strong.
I'm going on this, David. What if?
Yeah, he's
what
strong
if,
and he's quick, and I think if he realizes he can brush defenders aside and get shots in and start scoring, I think it could really happen for him. So I'd like him to be given that chance. And obviously, if we're winning or doing well, we don't need to worry so much. Obviously, last time we won comfortably in the end, but it was against a poor team. So it'll be interesting to see how that happened. You know what happens with other teams, but. I'd like to keep it as well. I'm with you and Mike on it really at the moment, and I think obviously we'll have Matt Smith coming back in a few weeks hopefully, and that does give us of course a very different option either to start or to change things off the bench.
Right, you know, and again, fans forget about the fact, you know, and including I do forget. Like, wait, we all obviously Matt Smith as well. And if you want, you know, again, if Kit wants to play with the lineup, if he ever wanted to, he could also play Ross McCormack by himself if he changed up the formation. There are things he can do, but I agree with you. I see the possibility of Moussa Dembele, you know, getting on a roll. If he scores one, maybe he scores three, maybe he scores five. And Colley has that knack to coming off the bench and basically being able to be instant offense and score a goal. So I'd like to see them stick with what they have, David, and if things go awry, then you can bring someone else in. And like you mentioned, Matt Smith will be coming back, hopefully. So I want them to stay with the status quo. They need to do their due diligence and look at options. But I think we're okay where we are right now. That's my opinion. That's your opinion. And that's Mike's opinion. Let's now hear from the Fulham supporters. And again, there's a difference of opinions here. So let's start here with Steve Lydiard, our Cottage Talk co-host. Without a doubt, if Ross gets injured, we're short of a quality striker who can guarantee goals. Our friend Roger Lewis in Spain. The reason I only gave the window 8 out of 10 is we need a proven striker, one with a bit of pace. The best teams all have pace in attack. Very interesting observation by Roger. Matthew Camp wrote, I'm happy that we didn't sign a striker because I feel Dembele deserves a chance. However, were a striker to get injured, I would use the emergency loan as that it's, you know, that's purpose of the emergency loan to bring in a player. I imagine that's where Matthew's going on that. Curtis Hurd said, no, The game is quick. The championship compared to other European leagues, which Dembele provides. I think Dembele has pace and flair about him that can fill that. Maybe a rotation with Woodrow. Colley has been getting goals, and hopefully Dembele can get one and get his season started like we're talking about, David. Either can provide what Fulham fans want. Tom O'Sullivan said, nope, Dembele is starting to come through and needs game time. And finally, well, I'm sorry, there are two more. My friend Nate in Canada said, no, only because I don't want it to hinder the development of our two young lads. And finally, Stephen Fulham, Swag Cab Murray said, it's all on Ross's shoulders. He needs support or backup. Okay, and those are all the comments on the Cottage Talk Facebook page. David, what do you make of those comments?
I think the general underlying trend is that people want Musa and Colley, but Musa especially to get the game time. Obviously, we know that we need Musa to sign a new contract, and bringing someone else in and Musa dropping to the bench will not be the way to help that, I would imagine. So, and you can't keep him in the team regardless of form, but I think he's shown enough to, you know, to take this chance with Matt Smith being injured that he's got to play and either, you know, start or at least rotate with Woodrow. So, you know, I think the majority of fans, for me, the message is they want to see the development of Dembele and also Woodrow furthered.
I totally agree with that. And listen, you know, here we are. We've been talking for the longest time that we want some of the youngsters to play. Here's a wonderful opportunity to see if they can grow into the players we hope that they become. You have a slew of games coming up. Let them play. See if it works. And if you need help, that's, you know, like someone commented, that's what the emergency loan window can be used for. Then you bring a striker. But we'll see how it goes. I'm not overly concerned that they didn't bring in Hooper. You know, again, that to me would have been the icing on the cake, David. But I still think it was a very good window. But I think they're okay where they are at the striker position. That's just my thoughts. And we'll see how things go. Let's move on to my second question, which kind of leads up from the first one to the second one. Let's talk about the summer transfer window as a whole. And I'm curious, I've not talked to you about this, so I don't know what your rating is going to be for this. Rate the Fulham summer transfer window overall, David, from 0 to 10. What do you give it?
I'm going to give it 7. I would have given it more, but I'm knocking off a mark or two for the way that it dragged out, especially towards the end, and also some of the protracted negotiations and things that are in there, supposedly. I know it's not necessarily Fulham's fault, but there's a lot I think could have been done a bit sooner. You know, and it went right to the wire, signing people at the end again, as always, when we knew we needed defenders from day one, and it was only towards the end of the window that we signed Stearman and Ream. So, for me, you know, hopefully we got the right personnel and it might have been worth the wait, but still, it would have been nice to have these things in place a lot sooner. But I'll give it 7 because I think in the main it's been a reasonable transfer window. We've signed a mixture of people who are sort of journeymen and whatever. You know, Lonergan, reasonable backup goalkeeper. Not sure if he's good enough to be a full-time first keeper, but a reasonable backup keeper certainly. People like Pringle, who, you know, who's a reasonable championship player. I'm not sure if he'll be good enough to play at a higher level. Then obviously the gamble, which was O'Hara, which seems to be a fantastic gamble so far because he's been fantastic, as I predicted, obviously, of course, Russ. But Kearney, who seems to, you know, have a bit of talent. I don't think we've seen all his talent yet. And obviously, you know, Jazz Richards, not sure about that really. Ryan Fredericks might turn out to be a better signing by kind of, you know, by default really. Be interesting to see if Richards isn't fit to play tomorrow with this collision we heard about.
Yeah, we'll talk about that.
We haven't had any real massive standout signings. Not like we did when we signed McCormack, you know, obviously last summer. You know, we've got a few people coming on moderate fees, but there's been a lot of frees and things like that. And, you know, we've got a left back on loan that we haven't really seen yet. And then we've got another left back on emergency loan who we have seen and we really like, and we'd probably want to keep him if we could. So, as I say, I think 7 out of 10 because I think we've got reasonable players, you know, reasonable quality, if not top quality across the board. And just also the time they took was a little bit long, really, and I think we should have put a few things in place a bit sooner.
Oh, very interesting observations there, David. And 7 out of 10, I see where you're going on that. Again, I'm going to play devil's advocate a little bit on that. You're talking about why didn't we sign some of these players earlier, talking about the defenders. Here's my answer to this. Well, if you're Bolton and if you're Wolves, why do you let these guys go? David, I think Fulham obviously wanted to sign these players earlier. I was getting frustrated. You were getting frustrated with the whole dunk situation. But part of this has to do with the teams that they were trying to get them from. And sometimes the later you get into the window, the more desperate the situation becomes and the prices go up and the pressure comes on. So I think part of the reason why those two players came in late, David, has to do with just the window itself. Would you agree with that?
Perhaps. I don't think these two were ever first choices, though. I think we had other people who were targets earlier on, and when it became clear that we weren't going to get them, we had to look elsewhere, because there was absolutely no mention of these two through the grapevines until literally before they signed, So, obviously, I think Dunk was a real target and others as well. And perhaps the Dunk thing was just too protracted, and we probably should have pulled out of that a lot earlier. And then started looking elsewhere. And, it's hard to say with these things, but if Bolton and Wolves were happy to let these guys go at that point, they probably would have been happy to let them go before. It wasn't as if we came in with, massive, ridiculous fees, I don't think. We've paid them reasonable amounts, but nothing, they obviously didn't value them so highly that they had to keep them at all costs. So it's there's a lot of factors involved with the whole thing, but I know what you're saying as well.
Yeah, again, listen, I was as frustrated as any Fulham supporter, but I also know the nature of this window that things pick up near the end. It's just the way it is. It's unfortunate that deals happen at the very end. And, I wish that Richard Stearman came in earlier. I wish Tim Ream came in earlier, but they came in when they came in because we could have used them earlier in the season. There's no question about it. And I do want to say one thing, David, because I've had the opportunity to see Tim Ream play for the U.S. men's national team now twice. And I am really encouraged by what I have seen. Again, he's actually been playing at left back, which is interesting, and he'll be playing center back for us. But he shows that calmness that we've seen in a very short period of time for Fulham. And, and obviously, just his overall confidence. I look forward to seeing how that partnership works with him and Stearman. Again, gentlemen, Jim compared – which is a huge comparison, Tim Ream to Aaron Hughes. That's so much to live up to. But we'll see if he turns out to be that type of player. And then who knows what type of player Richard Stearman comes in. But I think that will be center-back pairing. And we'll see how things go. But again, I understand your frustration because I'm as frustrated as you were. But I think it was a very good window for Fulham Football Club. And now I will share what the fans had to say about it. And I'm just going to go through the ratings. People had comments too, but there were so many of them. I just want to go through the ratings. Jason Birchie gave 8 out of 10. Yavor Alexiev gave it 9 out of 10. Steve Lydia gave it 8 out of 10. Kevin Gower said 9 out of 10. Roger Lewis said 8 out of 10. Gex Owen gave it a 10. Mark Craig, 8 out of 10. Dan Layton, 7 out of 10. Justin Glesser, 9 out of 10. Alex Lowy, 8 out of 10. Simon Ruggs, 6.5. Stephen O'Keefe, 8 out of 10. David Kettlehake, 8 out of 10. Nathan Canada, 8 out of 10. Stephen Fulham, Swagcap Murray, 8 out of 10. Peter Champkin said 7 out of 10. So, David, those are some of the ratings from the Fulham supporters. What do you make of those?
Well, they're in the same sort of ballpark. I think 8 out of 10 seems to be the most recurrent one. I think, it's not unreasonable. I'd say I'm just a little bit of caution because I feel that we're a bit slow in doing business. And obviously, we're not sure about the quality, in depth of some of the guys we've signed. What remains to be seen, there are question marks about Jazz Richards. Some people, even Ben Pringle, and I think he's done great, but whether he's the sort of player who would take us into the Premier League and stay with us in the Premier League, and so on and so forth. Jamie O'Hara was a big gamble, but it's it wasn't a big gamble, but it was a big unknown, I suppose. But it's turned out to be pretty good. You know, Kearney, who we've paid money for, hasn't, apart from a few cracking strikes, he hasn't maybe been as, I suppose, what's the other word? He hasn't been as dominant, perhaps, as some of people like O'Hara has, obviously, you know. And so he's still, I think the jury's still out a little bit in a couple of things, and we obviously have to see how Stearman is yet, and how and what sort of partnership he forms with Ream, assuming that's what's going to happen. I did speak to one of the guys I know who's a big Wolves fan. I asked him about Stearman. He said he'd do a good job for you. He said he's, you know, he's a good championship defender, but he said, like a lot of players, he's always got a mistake in him every game. So it's Philip Senderos Mark II, maybe. So that remains to be seen. I mean,
we'll
he's
see.
Liable to give away a penalty. So maybe he's going to be rivaling Jazz Richards for that one. But in the main, he spoke very positively about him. He just said he'd do a good job for you.
That's good. That's good. That's good to hear. And I've heard that about several of the players, which is great. And David, before we go and play Kit's audio clip previewing Blackburn, I want to ask you about this because something stood out for me that Mike said to me on the last show. I want to get your thoughts on it. And again, we're talking about the transfer window. He said that many of the players that Fulham have brought in were leaders on their team. And that might really work out well for Fulham. What are your thoughts about the players in this window? Many of them, you know, again, they were players of the season, but have that leadership quality. What do you think about that, and do you think that's a really good sign for Fulham?
It can be a very good thing. It could also work the other way. I mean, Ross McCormack might end up throwing his toys out the prep for him if there's kind of a whole pitch full of captains and he's in one of his funny moods. You know, it's difficult. It's difficult to say. Sometimes you need one clear leader and you need 10 followers or whatever, don't you? I mean, it's how it works. You know, I think you always need to have, like in every relationship, Russ, you know, I always said this before, in every relationship, you always need one dominant partner. If you have two people who are both very passive, nothing ever gets done. So you either need one dominant partner, or like in my relationship, you know, my wife wears the trousers even more than I do. So sometimes we argue, but we always get things done.
You complement each other.
Yeah, we complement. That's right. And so in that respect, it can work if you have lots of people who kind of like to be dominant. But it can also mean that at times you can get these clashes as well. So it needs to be, you know, it needs to be a kind of a very balanced and measured thing, because you certainly have to have one leader. Sometimes it's better just to have one leader, because otherwise you can start getting mixed messages. If you're sure you can remember, you know, if you've got a captain on the pitch and other people start shouting out orders and instructions and stuff, you can end up with chaos. So it's something that has to be, you know, very carefully sort of dealt with. And there needs to be, everyone needs to clearly know their job and their place in the team. And there needs to be, there needs ultimately to be a chain of command which people respect, whether they are, you know, the captain or not.
Very good point there, Dave. You know, again, there are a couple of different ways to look at it. And it's funny you talk about your wife. My wife's the exact same way. We complement each other. We're opposites, and it just works. It's an interesting thought by Mike, but I'd rather have, you know, a good amount of leaders. You know, again, there's always you know, again, I guess you could say good to have a mix, but it's, I think it's a positive to have some leaders. We'll see how it all works out. And, you know, again, very, very interesting thoughts by you on that. All right. Now going to play Kit's most recent interview with Sarah, and then I will get your thoughts on it, David. You ready?
Yep.
Okay. Here is Kit. I believe this was recorded yesterday with Sarah Brooks.
Kit, it seems like a long time since the last game. There's been a few players away on international duty, but you still had quite a big group to work with over the last 10 days or so. How's that all been going?
Yeah, it's gone really well. Obviously, we've got a couple of the new boys in, which is Stim and Ryan Fredericks, who've been able to integrate. Obviously, Jerry Lewis has been slightly longer, so those boys have really got used to the way we work and become a good part of the group very quickly. So that's really positive. A little bit frustrating, as international breaks often can be. You don't get your full squad of players to work with, but you know, the boys have gone away for their respective countries and done some good work there. So looking forward to getting everyone back. It's obviously playing a bit of a waiting game, make sure everyone comes back fit and well, which you certainly can't guarantee. But, you know, we're very hopeful, and certainly the news so far is that everyone's fine. So obviously Tim Ream, Sean Kavanagh still need to come back in yet. But other than that, it's all looking pretty good.
And for Blackburn on Sunday, it's an early kick-off, 12 o'clock. What are you expecting? You know how Blackburn are going to set up against Fulham. What are you looking for?
Well, I know Gary Boyer very well. He's a top lad and a very good manager, Gary, and he's had to work under difficult circumstances there. But they'll be, you know, they'll be well organised, they'll be physical, and they'll know their roles and responsibilities without a doubt. I watched them the night before we played Rotherham. They were at home to Bolton, and you know, it wasn't the best of games, to be perfectly honest. But they'll fight and scrap for everything, and they've got some genuine quality. And obviously, you know, in Jordan Rhodes, they've got a great goal scorer as well, which is always a bonus to have in your side. So it'll be a tough game, but again, I'm looking forward to getting all the boys back tomorrow. We can finally do some actual team shape and some work on what we want to achieve. So
you're training again at Craven Cottage. Does that really help with the preparation for a game?
I think it can do. I think also when we got some new players in who've never played at Craven Cottage for Fulham, it's you know, this is our home, and it's quite good to make players feel like that. You know, we've got 4 out of our 5 games this month are all at the cottage. So it's, you know, and I said before, I want to make Craven Cottage a fortress. You know, I want to make it a place where our fans turn up feeling that the team's going to win, you know, and having that genuine belief. I want the players to feel exactly the same. You know, it is our home, we should view it as such, you know, and it's a great place to play football when things are going well. We need to make sure things go well, and it's, you know, sometimes that feeling at home in your surroundings can play a you know, quite a strong, significant part in the actual results that you achieve. So the two things sort of go together. So it's chicken and egg scenario, but we'll try and do the right things in the preparation. Getting the boys set pieces are quite a big thing at the cottage as well, because the run-up's not, you know, different in all four corners and not easy. So again, a little bit of practice there, and those little things could make a difference come a match day, and that's what we're hoping for.
We talked previously about the importance of now getting off to a really good start, given that you've got the squad that you wanted and the acquisitions that you targeted. Not having all of the squad together, does that make it slightly trickier for you on Sunday?
Well, it's just, we couldn't, you know, so say, you know, a Tim Ream and a Richard Stearman have never met.
Yeah.
So tomorrow will be the first time they've met, let alone done any work together. So, but yeah, it doesn't make life easier, but I'm not complaining. I've been delighted with our acquisitions. Some of them were a bit later than ideally would have liked, but we've got real quality in the building. Top professionals, good players, and really good lads. So I'm really pleased. So I'm certainly not going to moan about, you know, a little bit of lack of preparation maybe for this game. It's fine, you know, we'll crack on, and you know, we'll do our business come Sunday.
And the loan window now open. Are we likely to see any more faces coming in prior to that closing?
Well, we're looking, but again, it's difficult. You know, we're very close to doing a sign, which I said about before, on deadline day. But it was reliant on other clubs getting the people in they wanted, which they didn't do now. So Premier League clubs aren't likely to, you know, can't get anyone in on loan now. So, you know, their situation probably hasn't changed, so they might well be unlikely to loan players out now. So again, we've got other targets and other people we're looking at actively. Whether we get them or not remains to be seen, you know, but we'll certainly try. And again, if it's someone who's the right person who we think can enhance our squad, we'll get them.
And the Crawley Town game, just a word on the first 45 minutes that Scott Parker has played in for quite a while. That must be very positive. It was a strong team that you put out, and it was a good result in the end.
Yeah, it was a really good fixture. It served the purpose perfectly. You know, few of the new boys got a run out. Joe Lewis, Richard Stearman, Ryan Fredericks, and Scotty coming back from his injury. So it was a great game for that. And a few of our younger players got a run out as well. You know, young Dennis and Josh Walker from the under-18s. So it was good to see them. Great experience for them to be on the pitch with your Scott Parks and with Jamie O'Hara second half and players like that. So it was great for them to get that opportunity. So it worked well, the Crawley fixture, in lots of ways. Great to see Scott get through his 45 minutes. A little bit sore afterwards, as you would expect. He'd been out such a long time after, you know, quite a serious operation. So.
And how important is he as a captain, as a leader off the pitch as well as on it?
Yeah, he's obviously great to have around, and, you know, he's one all the players look up to. You know, sort of Jamie's come in and made an immediate impact. But, you know, Scott Parker is someone who Jamie O'Hara looks up to from their time at Tottenham and just from what Scott's achieved in the game. So he's, you know, he's very important to us, you know, not just for what he can do for us on the pitch, but also on the training field and in and around the dressing room. You know, it's the whole dynamic of a football club that needs to be correct, needs to be right for you to be as successful as you can be. And Scott plays a big part in that for us.
And George Williams, ready to kick a ball, I hear.
Yeah, Georgie, unfortunately, because he had a very slight setback with his hamstring, he wasn't quite ready for Crawley. He penciled in for Crawley all the time, but literally 2 or 3 day setback, but it would have made it then 2 or 3 days too soon. So when he'd been out so long, it wasn't worth taking the risk. And I wouldn't do that with any player anyway. But now he's got the good training under his belt, George, and he's raring to go. So he will feature for the under-21s. Probably only a 30-minute cameo as his first one back in, but he'll play against Stoke at the Britannia on Saturday.
So all in all, things are bright. 3 points on Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, everything's going in the right direction. There's a lot of hard work being done in and around Motspur Park by a lot of people. It's all going in the right direction. Ultimately, it's all about getting wins, and that's what we need to do.
Wish you luck.
Thank you.
Okay, we are back, and that was an interview done, I believe, yesterday with the Fulham manager, Kit Simons, by Sarah Brooks, who does an excellent job of asking Kit questions. And I thought he shared some very interesting stuff in this recent audio clip. David, what do you get out of this clip with Kit this week?
I was a bit thrown for a minute because I could hear the training in the background. I don't know if you could hear that.
Thinking,
what's all this? Thought it was interference on the line at first. I could hear people shouting "man on," but I'm pleased to see that Kit kind of shared what I was thinking, that, you know, some of the acquisitions were a bit late coming in, but he's happy, you know, with the squad we have now. We certainly, I think, have a good squad of professionals, a varied squad. We do have covers in all positions, but and obviously good to hear that Scott Parker's on his way back, although it creates a problem that I'm not sure how we solve at the moment, really. And of course,
good
George,
point.
After such a long absence, I did hear that George had a little bit of a hamstring, but that's kind of par for the course when you've been out for a long time and you tend to find something else goes unrelated, or you have to be very, very careful getting back into the swing of things. But good to hear that they're coming back. And also, they had this closed door game to give a bit of practice to a few guys, which is obviously very useful in the long break, because some of the guys otherwise aren't getting any competitive football for a couple of weeks. So, yeah, all in all, quite a positive interview, I'd say.
One of the things that stood out for me, David, and I like when Fulham do this more and more, training at Craven Cottage, you know, working on set pieces. You know, I think they should do that more often, because this is your home ground. Make it feel like a fortress. I think part of that is getting to know the pitch. And especially when you have players that have not played as Fulham players that often at Craven Cottage. And again, maybe several of them have played there as, say, the opponents. You know, I think it's a major positive to train there. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, it's imperative. I mean, the only downside is obviously making sure the pitch is in good condition for matches. But otherwise, yeah, you have to do that, because it's a very difficult pitch to play on, I would imagine, for a lot of people, because the pitch is only 100 metres by 65, whereas standard size is 105 by 68, which is so five metres longer and 3 metres wider. I mean, not everyone is the same, but so it's, to start, it's quite a bit shorter. Yeah, you know, 5 metres, right? You know, that's what, 16 foot, something like that, is it, probably? So it's quite a bit shorter than some pitches. So, you know, and 3 metres is about 10 foot narrower. So that's, you know, it should be an advantage for us, because we're used to playing on it. It should be difficult for other teams. You know, it's surprising, all these things about we have no width, and it's and yet we're playing on a narrow pitch from the arguments of the past. But the worst bit, I mean, and you know, is I take corners occasionally, and the run-up for the corner is impossible. It's a very short, steep run-up. I mean, the height of the pitch, I don't know if you've seen it. I guess you haven't, have you, Russ? The height of the pitch must be, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 foot higher than the surround. I'd be interested to know how much it is. But so you have to run up a steep ramp to take a corner, and it's a very short ramp as well, because when they extended the stands a few years ago to put more seats at the front, they obviously, that's when the pitch was slightly reduced in size, I believe. I think they reduced the width. I don't think they reduced it in length. It's the same length as it always was, but I think they reduced it in width. So obviously they brought the stands out towards the pitch. So there's not a lot of room around the pitch. So you have these very short run-ups, you know, really for throw-ins, I suppose, comparatively, but especially for taking corners. And it's no surprise in one respect that we've struggled with corner delivery in the last few seasons, because it must be quite difficult to get enough run-up and power to deliver a good corner, because we had these issues with always finding the first man. So
right.
the more they can play at Craven Cottage, the better. I think they have tried to emulate the at Motspur Park. I believe they've marked the pitches out to be the same size as Craven Cottage, so they're used to it. But there's no way you can really replicate the kind of, you know, the hump, the pitch is a hump. They just kind of built the pitch up over the years. They just keep put a new pitch on top of other pitches. And I think it's to do with the drainage. It's also the height because of the river. They need, because of where the water table is. I'm sure someone might probably know the key reasons why the pitch is as high as it is, because it does make it quite difficult. The logical thing would be to take it all out and put it back flat, level with the surrounds, and then you'd have a much better run-up. You could even have a slightly bigger pitch if you really wanted it, but obviously for logistical reasons, the pitch is where it is. So, yeah, they need to play on it as much as they can without obviously damaging the pitch for match days.
Listen, I couldn't agree more, and I'm glad that they're using it for very good reasons, because you just talked about the last 2 years, set pieces, corners have been horrible. And I think the fact that they're really working on that, getting used to the confines of Craven Cottage and getting used to that run-up and realizing that it's not that far, I think they need that practice. So I'm glad that they're doing it. And, oh, by the way, David, I've actually have been to Craven Cottage. I know you might forget this, but I have been there. 3 years ago, I was there. And so I did get to see the pitch. Just a little correction there, but no problem. All right, my friend, let's get into our preview of the Blackburn match. I'll just tell you a little bit about Blackburn just to get us going. And one thing I've been doing recently is going to whoscored.com. Great website. Many Fulham supporters go there. It's a wonderful website, chock full of information. So I'm going to use some of the information I got off of this website. And first of all, just look at the table. Fulham are currently 14th. And Blackburn are 21st. And I'm just going to go through, David, just real quickly with you. Talk about team characteristics of Blackburn. Again, this is from whoscored.com. They list their strengths: defending set pieces, attacking set pieces, creating scoring chances, protecting the lead. Blackburn's weaknesses: finishing scoring chances. Blackburn's style: attack through the middle, long balls, take a lot of shots. Opponents play aggressively against them, playing in their own, rotate their first 11. And then it gives you a little match forecast. It says Blackburn will create many scoring chances. That's just to give you a little background on them, players to look out for. We're going to be talking a little bit about Jordan Rhodes coming up. I do want to mention, David, unless you weren't familiar with this, Danny Guthrie plays now for Blackburn. So it's going to be interesting to see him play. Again, he did play with Fulham for a few matches last season, so he will be in central midfield for Blackburn. All right, David, our preview. Let's now focus on Jordan Rhodes. This is a very dangerous striker, someone that Fulham tried several times to bring to Craven Cottage. What are your thoughts about Jordan Rhodes?
I know he's a proven goal scorer, and I think the majority of Fulham fans would love to see him at the Cottage, especially those with the name Mike Gregg, obviously, because Mike is Jordan's biggest fan, I think.
Yes.
And I can't disagree with that, because he's been excellent, and the only real sort of surprise is that he's still at Blackburn. You think he would have gone to a bigger Championship side, or certainly a Championship side with perhaps more prospects of promotion, or even a Premier League side, perhaps. So he's going to be very dangerous. He's a man to watch, most certainly. He is in a lot of effects, a traditional sort of number nine striker. Gets on the end of crosses, puts the ball in the back of the net. And if they are a team that create a lot of chances, we're going to have to be very, very watchful of him and keep close shackles on him.
I totally agree. And, you know, yes, Mike Gregg has wanted Jordan Rhodes at Fulham for the longest time, and I understand why. You know, I've watched him several times. He's a very dangerous striker, and he's definitely someone that Fulham need to contain in this match. All right, David, before we talk about key players for Fulham, I'm going to talk about a player that could be a key for different reasons. Tom Kearney, I want to get your thoughts on this. I was thinking about this. What can Tom Kearney do besides, obviously, on the pitch? Do you think that he can offer Fulham in this game, meaning that he's a former Blackburn player? What do you think, knowing how Blackburn play, what he can give Kit in this game and help Fulham in this match?
Well, hopefully, yeah, he's been giving Kit and the team sort of nuggets of information about sort of things to watch out for. And on a separate note, he will be, I'm sure, very much up for playing against his old team. Much as I said, you know, I thought Ben Pringle would be against Rotherham. Of course, he, you know, by being in the right place at the right time, he banged in the first goal, of course. But I think there's always an extra zest to your game when you're playing against a former club. You know, whether you left acrimoniously or whether you left on good terms, I think you always want to show that you made the right move by leaving and bettering yourself, and that, you know, your career has progressed on by moving. So I'm certain he will be vital to the build-up here. Not that I'm sure that Kit and his team will have been analysing the way Blackburn play and looking at their strengths and weaknesses and what to watch out for, but I'm sure Kearney as well will have been most useful. I hope he will be, and I'm obviously hoping that, you know, he will be in a position to have a great game on Sunday, because, as I said before, I don't think we've seen fully all the best of him, and it's because of this position. Maybe he's been playing on the right of midfield. It's only when he comes into the middle, really, that we really see the best of him, I think. So it'll be interesting to see what lineup goes out on Sunday, and assuming he starts, and if he's in that position, the players that are around him, which will help him to play.
Listen, I totally agree with your assessment there. And, you know, I have a feeling that he was already key in their preparation. You know, it would be foolish not to ask him about his experience at Blackburn, strengths and weaknesses. So hopefully he shared that information with his teammates and Kit and helped with their preparation for this match. But now moving forward to key players. For me, David, before I ask you, I think he is a major key player in this game for some of the reasons I just mentioned, but also for the other reasons you mentioned. I think that he's going to want to play very well against his former side, and two, I don't think we've seen the best of him. I think this might be his coming out party, as you might say here in America, you know, when he really shows just how good he really is. Because I think he's the most talented player Fulham got in the transfer window. He is my key player. Who are your key players?
Well, I could take your Tom Kearney, and I could trump you out almost with a Ryan Tunnicliffe for all the same reasons, because
really,
bit of a controversial choice maybe, but of course he was there as well.
Well, he did play at Blackburn.
He was very popular there, and he suddenly by luck almost found himself back in the team, and it'll be very interesting to see whether he keeps his place, because, you know, by all accounts he was excellent in the cup match against Sheffield United, and seemed to do a good job as well, obviously, in the win up at Rotherham. So it's a very brave manager who goes around changing a winning team, of course. So I think, you know, Ryan Tunnicliffe could also be a very important person, because he's from that part of the world anyway.
Yep.
So I'm sure he knows people from there. He may know people of Blackburn fans, and he may have a point to prove as well.
That's right.
Otherwise, I think it's back to all the old favourites, you know, O'Hara, to pull the strings again, hopefully. And this is where, as I said, I think it's time for Dembele, given the chance, to start showing what he can do. He needs to take the bull by both horns, and, you know, make use of these opportunities he's had in playing and start hitting the back of the net, I think.
I totally agree with you, David. And, again, very interesting take by you. I'm glad where you went on this. You actually went to a place. I wasn't even thinking of Ryan Tunnicliffe. Very good point by you. And, again, he did go out on loan to Blackburn last season and played very well. And then back to us, you know, again, it was a very strange time for him to come back to us. But recently he's played very well. So he might have a point to prove as well. And he might be a key player along with my pick, Tom Kearney. But I'm glad that you brought up Dembele because again, maybe this is the game when he breaks out. So very interesting players to talk about in this upcoming match for Fulham against Blackburn. All right, David, it goes to my favorite part of the show, and that's asking you this. What do Fulham need to do to win the match, my friend?
Score more than once, I would imagine. I think Blackburn are definitely capable of all of a goal with Jordan Rhodes there, so we have to make sure we can score at least two.
Okay, so for you it's just scoring more than two. Let me ask you again, I don't think I've talked to you about this. You know, again, Marcus Bettinelli is going to be out for a while. What is your confidence level with Andy Lonergan?
I think he's a reasonable goalkeeper. I'm not sure if I'm happy enough with him to be a permanent first choice. Obviously, he has made some great saves and his all-round play has been generally good. I think there's been a few kind of interesting decisions on crosses where he's maybe not come out and claimed the ball or he's punched the ball where you would look for a goalkeeper to catch it. I'm not sure he's been beaten by a couple of good long-range shots, but I'm just not sure whether he could have done better on any of those or not. You know, they are from a long range, and he's a big man, and whether he could have got closer to them, I'm not 100% convinced. But then I haven't seen a lot of him in the flesh, so I still need to really have a good look at him myself to decide whether or not he is the real deal. Because when I saw him in the Huddersfield game, I thought on a couple of the saves, I thought he made a meal of them. You know, saves for the camera kind of scenario. I thought they were more comfortable saves than he made them look. And I think there was one, it was a very showy save. And there's another one where he ended up bumping into the post. And, I wonder whether... I'm not sure. As I say, you can't really fault him, you know, in what he has done. Clean sheet up at Rotherham. We've had a penalty save as well. But I'm not sure about long-term whether he's the right man for the job.
Okay, fair enough assessment on him. But let me ask you this. You know, again, I'm glad that you said that you want to see more of him. But in the matches you've seen so far, I've noticed, again, this is just me, a confidence that, again, we're comparing him against the goalkeeper from last season, and I'm not talking about Marcus Bettinelli. Do you think even confidence alone as a backup goalkeeper has been vital so far to the back four?
Oh, certainly. I mean, although Pajamas is still playing international football for Hungary for some reason, I had no faith in him. And obviously Lonergan seems to provide a much more confidence to his defence. And, of course, with Ream there, they're people who have played together previously as well. So that always helps as well, I think. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, if Ream knows Lonergan's weaknesses, he can counteract for that. You know,
sure.
When I played in goal, I never came off my line once to take a cross. But my defence knew that. Because I had such a good defence, I never had to do it. Because I'm 5'11", I'm not the tallest goalkeeper. So I stayed on my line. And so if he knows Lonergan's not very good on crosses, Ream, he can hopefully counteract that. He'll know he has to go for it. But you've got
some
goalkeepers who will, like, they'll climb over the whole team, literally, to take a cross. I mean, Schwarzer was a bit like that sometimes. He'd come out and climb over everyone. And when you know your goalkeeper's doing that, then you leave them to it if you have confidence in them. So it helps that Ream knows Lonergan's game. And I think in time, obviously, the other Fulham players will likewise. And hopefully you can adjust for each other's weaknesses along the way.
Boy, David, you're really bringing it. You're bringing it with talking about Tim Ream and Andy Lonergan, and I'm glad that you brought up Ryan Tunnicliffe. You're bringing up these great nuggets today. You've been excellent, my friend. All right, let's move on. Let's now go to part of the show where we're going to predict the starting 11 that Kit's going to use. And, David, I know you might have different ideas. So what I want you to do is I want you to think about what Kit's going to do on Sunday with his starting 11, and then if you disagree with some of the things you think he's going to do, please feel free to share them.
Well, for me, I think Kit would be mad not to go with an unchanged team, really. If everybody's fit and available, he should stick to a winning team. With a possible exception, I think he will probably bring in Stearman for Dan Burn, which is going to be harsh on Dan Burn. But
right.
I think he wants to get the Stearman and Ream partnership going. And I know we talked about it on the previous show. People seem to be more comfortable with that balance of a a right-footed and a left-footed central defender. Although, you know, I've watched a lot of football since we spoke, and nearly every team I've watched, they have two right-footed central defenders. You know, I was looking at England when they played, and we had, like, Jagielka playing at left centre-back, and we had Chris Smalling at left centre-back, both right-footed players. So I think it's a bit of a hoax or a myth about you can't play two left-footed guys at central defence because most teams play two right-footed guys. But I think the one change will be, assuming there's no other injuries, he will bring in Stearman instead of Dan Byrne. And obviously then Ream will switch to left centre-back because he played at right centre-back last time. If it was me, I think I actually would take Richards out because he's always giving away penalties. And I think Ryan Fredericks could potentially be the better option long-term at right-back. I want to see what he can do because he's well-known for being an attacking right-back. And that's what we need absolutely on that side. If we're going to be playing Tom Kearney in that sort of right midfield role, Kearney needs an overlapping fullback to work.
I agree with you.
And Jazz Richards doesn't really overlap that much. We've seen a little bit from him, but not very much. I'm not absolutely convinced about his defending. He gives away too many penalties. So actually, for me, I would actually make the change of bringing in Ryan Fredericks and giving him a debut. I don't know if it will happen because there was talk that Jazz Richards had a collision with Ben Pringle.
With Ben Pringle.
They both hope to play. But for me, I actually would like to see Fredericks, so I think potentially he's going to be the better option because he's someone who's played as a wing back as well as a right back, so he's quite well known for going forward, and I think that would help Tom Kearney as well.
Listen, that's a valid point, David. You know, and it's funny because again, talking back to Mike Gregg, talking about on the left hand side, how all of a sudden you see Ben Pringle being more dangerous, and you know, again, I don't think it's coincidence that he started looking more dangerous when James Husband came in against Rotherham. You know, again, you know, came in on loan. Now, if you have that on the other side, I actually think Jazz Richard played fairly well against Rotherham and did some of that overlapping you're talking about. But I know what you're saying. You want to see more of it. You want to see a consistency. And I'm not against that either. And what's interesting, David, is Kit now has options. He was talking about this in his preview that's on the Fulham website, talking about the situation, you know, with Ben Pringle and also Jazz Richards that they clashed. And there's a possibility that Jazz Richards might not be available for Sunday. But what's good is that he does now have an option with Ryan Fredericks. And, you know, I want to see him play. But that's what's great about this. I think we have depth now. We have options. And, you know, I'd like to see if Ryan Fredericks can offer what you're hoping he can offer, David, because I think that will help Kearney a tremendous amount, like it's helped Ben Pringle on the other side. So let's see if Kit goes that way, you know, because eventually Fredericks is going to play, and I definitely want to see what he can offer. All right, David, it is time to go through predictions, and I'm going to, before we go through your prediction and my prediction, I want to get the predictions from the Fulham supporters. Before I get those, are you going to be making the trek? Are you feeling up to it?
I don't feel very good, but I'm going to try because I can either sit at home in pain, bored to death, or I can sit on a train slightly less bored to death in pain. So, you know, it's I know my limitations, so I'm just going to make sure there's not too much exercise. Last time when I went to Huddersfield, it was 30 degrees Celsius, you know, it was 86 Fahrenheit that day, Russ. It almost killed me. I couldn't walk more than 100 yards without having to sit down and get my breath. So I'm going to try my very, very best. I mean, I've managed to do an hour on the show here with a bit of morphine and codeine, and maybe it's made me better than normal. So do the same again on Sunday, and hopefully it will see me through okay.
Okay, very good, David. And let me just say, and I'll say this again, this has been a very enjoyable hour with you. You've been spot on. Great commentary today, David. It's been wonderful talking to you today. I've enjoyed this past hour. But before we wrap up the show, we do have to go through predictions. I'm going to give you the predictions from the Fulham supporters that put it on the Cars Talk Facebook page. And Yavor Alexiev, we'll start off with him, says 3-0 to Fulham. Billy Marr says 2-1. Early lead in the first 20. Equalizer, early second half, and the winner scored in the last 20 minutes. David Kettlehake, we're riding high right now, and assuming no more injuries, I'm looking at you, Jazz and Pringle. I'm going for 3-1 Fulham. Come on, you Whites. Steve Lydiard, 3-1 to Fulham. No more excuses. Stephen Fulham Wheatley, 4-2. Chris Baugh, this is the start of the promotion push. 2-0 Fulham. Kevin Gower, 2-0 to Fulham. Those are the predictions, David. Before I give mine, what is yours?
Well, it should be a very winnable match for us in looking at Blackburn's position, and hopefully we've turned the corner. But I think in true Fulham style, we're going to probably make hard work of it. So I'm going to go for the boring old 2-1 to Fulham, but it's still a win, but let's hope it's more comfortable than that.
Okay, very good. All right, David, I am going to go with a Fulham victory. I'm feeling a little bit more confident. Again, nothing against Blackburn. Blackburn, you know, again, you know, it's funny. When you think of Blackburn, they lost Kearney. They lost Rudy Gusteed, who's, I believe, now playing for, I want to say, is it Aston Villa? He's now in the Premier League. I could be wrong where he ended up. But he's not with them.
Right.
But they still have Jordan Rhodes. I'm sorry, David?
Yeah, that's right. No, you were right, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, they, you know, again, they've had they've had a tough start to the season. They haven't had a victory yet. But, again, I have respect for Blackburn. It's not going to be easy. I'm going to go 3-1 to Fulham. David, you're going to be happy. I'm not going for a hat trick for Ross McCormack. Instead, I'm going to go for 2 goals to Moussa Dembele and 1 goal for Tom Kearney. That's going to be my goal scorers in this match. I'm not even going to say Ross McCormack. I'm going to say Dembele breaks out with 2 goals, David. How about that?
That's good. I just hope we don't put the hex on him now.
I hope not. I certainly hope not. All right, my friend. Seriously, wonderful show. Great job by you. It's been very enjoyable doing this show with you today. Before we go, any final thoughts?
No, that's just I'm looking forward to my bed now. This is late for me lately because I normally take my painkillers in the evening and I'm off to sleep by about 10. So you've done well keeping me up this long, Russ. So I'm going to go to bed and hopefully hit the sack and have a good night's sleep and have a good weekend and feel
okay,
fine on Sunday. To go and see a good Fulham victory, hopefully.
Let's hope that, David. And seriously, just take care of yourself. Like I said, it's been a pleasure doing this episode with you. But let's wrap this up. For David Holly, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk. Cheers, David.
Cheers, Russ. Cheers, everybody.
Take care. Boys and girls, London calling. Now don't look to us, phony Beatlemania.